So, I want you to try and picture something for a second, just right now as you're listening. Imagine you're standing on a shoreline, looking out at the water. But instead of a normal wave, or even a big surfing wave, you are looking at a solid wall of water that is the height of a towering
Oh,
skyscraper.
yeah, an absolute monster of a wave.
Right. We're talking over 1,700 feet tall, literally taller than the Empire State Building, just rearing up out of nowhere and completely blocking out the sky. I mean, it sounds like a scene ripped straight out of a big budget disaster movie, right? But the crazy thing is, it's not fiction at all.
No, it's really not. It is
Exactly.
a very real, heavily documented, and frankly terrifying geological reality. And to even begin to wrap our heads around how a wave can reach up into the clouds like that, we basically have to completely unlearn almost everything we think we know about how ocean waves actually work.
Yeah, and that unlearning is exactly the mission of this deep dive, because today we are taking a massive, highly detailed compilation of research all about this phenomenon, the mega tsunami, and distilling it down just for you.
Exactly, because it's a deeply misunderstood topic.
Totally. The goal here is to arm you with the surprising physics, the wild history, and the actual real-life future risks of these monster waves. So by the end of this, you are going to have a shortcut to being the most well-informed person in the room on this stuff.
So, okay, let's unpack this, because I'll be honest, when I first started digging into the mechanics of a mega tsunami, I just assumed it was like a regular tsunami, just scaled way up.
Right, that's what almost everyone assumes. But fundamentally, the engineering of the wave is completely different. They are entirely different beasts driven by completely different physical engines.
Okay, so break that down for us. What's the baseline for a regular tsunami then?
Well, a normal tsunami, the kind that unfortunately causes so much devastation across coastlines, is driven by tectonic activity, earthquakes. So imagine the seafloor suddenly shifting up or down along a massive fault line.
Like the whole bottom of the ocean just dropping and jumping up. Exactly. That violent movement displaces a huge volume of water from the bottom up. And out in the deep, open ocean, those tectonic tsunamis are incredibly stealthy.
Stealthy, like you wouldn't even notice it.
You really wouldn't. A major tectonic wave passing through deep water might only be a slight swell, maybe a foot high. I mean, a massive cargo ship could literally have a devastating tsunami pass right underneath its hull, and the crew wouldn't even spill their coffee.
Oh, wow, that's wild because the energy is just so spread out.
Yes, exactly. They have a tremendously long wavelength. The energy stretches out over miles and miles. The wave doesn't actually grow tall until it approaches land. As the sea floor slopes upward near the coast, it compresses that massive, deep column of traveling water, pushing it up into a breaking wave.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. But even then, they don't get skyscraper tall, right?
No, not at all. Even with the most powerful strike-slip earthquakes ever recorded by seismologists, an ordinary tsunami generally maxes out at a run-up height, meaning the maximum vertical height the water reaches on land of around 30 meters, or roughly 100 feet.
Which, I mean, is obviously still huge and profoundly destructive. But we are talking about waves hundreds of meters tall today, like over 1,000 feet. So if a mega tsunami isn't generated by the bottom of the ocean shifting upward, it has to be coming from an entirely different direction.
Right, from above. Mega tsunamis are caused by a sudden, massive displacement of material falling directly into the water or occurring right next to it. We're talking about colossal mountain landslides, catastrophic volcanic collapses, or meteor impacts.
So it's basically a giant splash.
Exactly. Instead of the ocean floor shifting to move the water, you have a massive external object violently splashing the water upwards and outwards.
You know, I was trying to like visualize the physics of this difference earlier to make it stick in my head. And a normal tsunami is kind of like if you were standing in a swimming pool and the entire concrete bottom of the pool suddenly shifted up an inch. It moves all the water at once, right?
The entire body of water is displaced.
Yeah, and it creates a wave that travels the entire length of the pool, wall to wall, without losing much of its momentum. But a mega tsunami is more like dropping a heavy bowling ball into a bathtub.
That is actually a perfect analogy.
You get this immediate towering splash right at the point of impact, but that massive splash doesn't travel down the hallway, you know? It just kind of crashes right there.
Yeah, that perfectly illustrates the underlying physics, particularly a concept called radial damping. Because your bowling ball creates a highly localized event, the energy spreads out radially, basically in an expanding circle from that single point of impact.
Okay, so it's a circle, not a straight line.
Right. And as that circle gets wider and wider, the initial energy is forced to distribute over a larger and larger circumference. So the wave height decays incredibly fast compared to a tectonic tsunami, which moves more like a straight, continuous wall of energy marching perpendicular to a fault line.
So the mega tsunami starts out unbelievably huge, but it burns through its energy faster because it's stretching out in all directions at once.
Exactly. That radial spread is also why they have a much shorter wavelength. And the physical environment where this happens actually dictates just how monstrous that initial splash can get. It all comes down to a fluid dynamics ratio called the Froude number.
The Froude number. Okay, what's that measuring?
In this context, it calculates how fast the landslide is moving compared to how fast the wave can propagate or move away from the impact zone.
Okay, let me think through how that applies here. In deep, open ocean water, waves can travel incredibly fast. So if a massive landslide happens into a really deep body of water, the wave being created is propagating so quickly that it essentially like outpaces the landslide itself.
You've got it. The energy escapes rapidly. It's running away from the splash before the splash can stack up too high.
But then, wait, what happens in shallower water?
Well, consider the alternative. In shallower water, wave propagation is significantly slower. The waves simply cannot escape the impact zone fast enough. The mountain is still falling in, displacing millions of tons of water, but the water literally can't get out of its own way.
Oh, man. So the energy has nowhere to go but up.
Precisely. It compounds, pushing the water column higher and higher into the sky.
That is so counterintuitive. I mean, you automatically associate deep ocean water with giant waves, but it's the exact opposite here. The shallow water traps the kinetic energy and forces it skyward.
It really is wild.
Yeah.
And for a long time, these dynamics were purely theoretical. I mean, geologists assumed ancient, massive geological processes could create these skyscraper waves, but they lacked hard, undeniable proof.
Right, until they found a literal crime scene in Alaska.
Yes, the Tuyu Bay is this deep, incredibly steep-sloped fjord up in Alaska. In 1953, geologists were exploring the area, looking for oil deposits, actually. And while surveying the bay, they noticed an incredibly distinct and unnatural pattern in the trees lining the slopes. They discovered what they later termed trim lines.
And trim lines, just to be clear, are these visible boundaries on the mountain, right? Because usually in a wild, undisturbed bay, you have mature, old-growth forests that grow right down to the water's edge.
Normally, yes.
But here, the geologists saw this razor-sharp boundary line drawn high up on the mountain slopes. Below that specific line, every single tree was young. But above the line, the forest was ancient.
And not just that. The older trees, sitting right on that boundary line, had severe, traumatic scarring all up and down their seaward sides.
It's like the bark was just stripped off.
Completely stripped away. So the geologists hypothesized that some enormous localized force had violently ripped out the entire lower forest right down to the bedrock and then essentially sandblasted the trees that barely survived higher up.
Which points to a giant wave. But the sheer height of those trim lines defied the known physics of water displacement at the time, right?
Exactly. They needed to see it happen to really understand it.
And tragically, they didn't have to wait very long. Because just 5 years later, in 1958, nature provided a real-time demonstration.
A catastrophic one.
Yeah. A 7.8 magnitude earthquake struck the region. Now, the earthquake itself didn't generate the wave from the seafloor like a normal tsunami. The shaking actually caused a massive failure at the head of the bay. A colossal chunk of rock and glacial ice sheared right off the mountain.
We are talking about 40 million cubic yards of solid material, roughly 80 million metric tons of earth dropping almost vertically into the water.
And the result was the highest wave ever recorded in human history. The run-up height, measuring how high the water violently surged up the opposite slope of the bay, was nearly 525 meters, over 1,720 feet.
It completely obliterated the soil, the trees, everything. It left nothing but scoured bedrock in its wake.
And what makes this event even more surreal to me is that there were actual human beings sitting right in the middle of it who somehow survived.
Howard Ulrich and his son.
Yes. They were out in their small fishing boat, just anchored in Lituya Bay when the mountain gave way. The sheer terror of that moment is just unimaginable. The wave caught their boat, snapped their heavy anchor chain like a piece of string, and physically lifted them on the crest, carrying them high over the tops of the trees on the shoreline.
And then, incredibly, the backwash of the wave carried them back out into the center of the bay, setting them down safely.
It's an absolute miracle they survived, and they provided critical eyewitness data to corroborate the geological scarring. But wait, let me stop you there for a second, because I'm trying to picture the sheer mechanics of this in my head, and I get stuck.
What's the holdup?
Well, dropping 80 million tons into a bay is undeniably huge. But water displacement alone, it's like our bathtub analogy. Dropping a rock into a pool of water just doesn't splash a third of a mile straight up into the air. The math of pure displacement just doesn't seem to account for a 1,700-foot wave. So what else was happening under the surface to multiply that force so dramatically?
I'm glad you asked that, because that is the exact discrepancy that puzzled researchers for decades. The rock alone couldn't do it. The math simply didn't balance out. It wasn't until complex fluid dynamic modeling became available much later that scientists developed what they call the PC model to explain the anomaly.
The PC model. Okay, what does PC stand for?
Plunging and crater. It explains the cascading combination of events. First, you have the plunging aspect. The rock didn't just crumble and slide piecemeal. It fell as a massive monolithic block.
Just one giant solid piece.
Exactly. And as it plummeted down that near vertical slope, the sheer aerodynamic drag of that monolithic face pulled a massive volume of air down into the water with it. So you aren't just displacing water with solid rock. You were displacing it with rock surrounded by a colossal, highly pressurized air bubble.
Oh, wow. So the trapped air acts like a secondary explosive force when it desperately wants to escape back to the surface.
Precisely. Then you have the crater aspect. That monolithic block hit the bottom of the bay with such concentrated kinetic energy that it excavated a huge crater into the seafloor, instantly displacing massive amounts of thick ancient sediment. So now you have rock, expanding pressurized air, and a violent underwater mudslide, all moving the water column simultaneously.
That is insane. And wait, the bay is surrounded by glaciers, right? Does the ice play a role in this chain reaction at all?
A massive one, actually. The explosive force of all that underwater displacement literally hit the adjacent Lituya Glacier and violently uplifted 1,300 feet of solid ice along the entire front face of the glacier. The ice shattered and added even more to the overall displacement.
So it really isn't just a splash. It is a synchronized underwater explosion of monolithic rock, compressed air, displaced mud, and a shattering glacier all happening in the span of maybe 5 or 10 seconds.
Exactly. It was a perfect catastrophic storm of physics that fired the water out of the bay like a cannon.
That makes complete sense. And that 1958 event officially cemented the term megatsunami into the scientific lexicon, right? It proved they existed and gave geologists a blueprint.
Yeah, once they knew the specific signatures to look for, you know, those high altitude trim lines, bizarre sediment deposits hundreds of feet above sea level, they started uncovering evidence of these monsters throughout human history and even deep into prehistory.
Which brings up a crazy thought. If a localized rockfall in Alaska can throw water over 1,700 feet into the air, you really have to wonder what happens when the object falling from the sky isn't a piece of a mountain, but an asteroid the size of a city.
Chicxulub.
Exactly. 66 million years ago, the meteor responsible for wiping out the dinosaurs slammed into the shallow sea near the Yucatan Peninsula. And when you look at the data from the impact models, the initial wave generated by that strike was 1.5 kilometers tall. That is almost a full mile of vertical water.
And what's truly staggering to consider is that its height was actually severely restricted by the depth of the water it hit.
Wait, really?
Yes. If that exact same asteroid had struck the deep open ocean instead of a shallow continental shelf, simulations suggest the initial megatsunami could have reached 4.6 kilometers in height. Almost 3 miles high.
3 miles of water. I mean, the human brain literally cannot process a wave that touches the cruising altitude of a commercial airplane. But the research also details the specific physical mechanism that creates a wave that tall from an impact, calling it the Edgerton effect.
Right. It's visually similar to those high-speed photographs where a single drop of milk hits a bowl and the liquid perfectly rebounds up into that delicate little crown shape with a spire in the middle.
The milk drop crown. Yeah, that visual is really helpful. But obviously, the physics of an asteroid impact are way more violent than dropping milk.
Slightly more violent, yes. When an asteroid that size hits the ocean at thousands of miles an hour, it doesn't just splash the water. It instantly vaporizes it, punching a massive vacuum hole straight down to the seafloor.
So it pushes the water outward, creating a void where the ocean used to be?
Yes. The initial blast wave forces the water out in a ring. But water is incredibly heavy, and the ocean is under immense pressure. The moment the downward kinetic energy of the asteroid is spent, all of that displaced surrounding ocean rushes back into the glowing, superheated crater to fill the vacuum. Trillions of gallons of water slam together in the dead center of the crater at unimaginable speeds.
And the only place for that colliding energy to go is straight up.
It's a hydrodynamic rebound. The water, violently colliding with itself, pushes a central column of seawater 10 to 12 kilometers straight up into the stratosphere before it inevitably collapses back down under its own weight, sending out the subsequent waves that reset the coastal geography of the entire planet.
It is just the ultimate display of displacement. But, you know, we don't have to look 66 million years into the past to see these forces at work. They are still actively shaping our world right now. Take the Dixon Fjord landslide in Greenland, which happened very recently in 2023.
Oh, yes. That was a fascinating event.
A massive landslide hit the narrow fjord, triggering a mega tsunami with a run-up of over 200 meters. But reading the breakdown of the Dixon Fjord event, the most fascinating part wasn't the initial 600-foot wave, it was the aftermath. It created a phenomenon called a seiche.
Yes, spelled S-E-I-C-H-E. Because the wave was generated inside the incredibly steep, narrow, confined walls of the fjord, that massive volume of displaced water simply couldn't disperse into the open ocean. It had nowhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
So it rebounded off the opposite wall and then rebounded back.
It's like carrying a wide, shallow bowl of soup across the kitchen and you stumble. The liquid just keeps violently rocking back and forth from edge to edge.
That sloshing effect is the seiche. And in Dixon Fjord, the water sloshed back and forth for a full continuous week.
A whole week.
A week. The rhythm and mass of that water moving was so immense that it produced a continuous seismic signal. Instruments all over the globe picked up a 9-day hum. A single splash in Greenland quite literally had the earth ringing like a bell for over a week.
Wow. Seeing the sheer, unyielding power of these natural forces really makes you realize how delicate our own coastal footprints are. And unfortunately, we haven't always respected those physical laws. We tend to think of mega tsunamis strictly as acts of nature, asteroids, earthquakes, collapsing glaciers. But there's a profoundly tragic example where human engineering directly triggered one.
The Vian Dam in Italy.
Yeah, in 1963. Here's where it gets really interesting and heartbreaking. We always think of these as acts of nature, but human engineering actually triggered one.
Yes, the Vian Dam tragedy is an incredibly sobering lesson in applied geology. At the time, it was one of the tallest dams in the world. It was seen as an absolute marvel of engineering. But the geological assessments of the valley walls surrounding the newly created reservoir were severely flawed. They completely underestimated the instability of the mountain flank.
Because of the water.
Right. Human activity specifically, the repeated filling and rapid draining of the reservoir, fundamentally destabilized the side of the adjacent mountain.
The changing water levels essentially lubricated the rock layers until a massive landslide just let go and fell directly into the artificial lake they had created.
And the sudden displacement caused a 250-meter surge over 800 feet of solid water that violently overtopped the dam.
Did the dam break?
The concrete dam itself incredibly withstood the force, but the sheer volume of water washed down the narrow valley, completely destroying multiple villages below and killing nearly 2,000 people in a matter of minutes. It highlights a core, non-negotiable truth. When we alter geography, when we build massive reservoirs in steep valleys, we must rigorously respect the sheer physics of mass and displacement. Gravity simply does not care about engineering awards.
Yeah, seeing what a miscalculation did at Vajont Dam makes you look at every cliff face differently. And if you're listening right now, you're probably scanning your own memory of coastal vacations, wondering where the next drop might happen and if you should be worried about it.
That is the very natural response. And if you watched certain highly sensationalized documentaries from the early 2000s, you might actually hold the belief that a global catastrophe is overdue.
Yes, the Canary Islands theory. This is probably the most famous piece of mega tsunami pop culture. The theory suggested that the Cumbre Vieja volcano on the island of La Palma was unstable and a massive chunk of it was going to collapse into the Atlantic Ocean.
I remember the broadcasts well.
Right. The resulting wave was predicted to be 50 meters tall, like 160 feet, crashing into the entire U.S. East Coast, wiping out Boston, New York, Miami. I remember watching that on television and being genuinely terrified.
It was broadcast widely, and it absolutely captured the public imagination. But I'm very happy to synthesize the current geological consensus and provide some calming news. That scenario is fundamentally flawed and vastly overhyped.
But wait, wouldn't that radial damping concept we talked about apply here? The energy spreading out over the entire Atlantic Ocean.
Exactly. You've hit on one of the two main debunking factors. A mega tsunami is a point source event. The energy spreads outward in an ever-widening circle. By the time that wave crossed thousands of miles of the Atlantic Ocean, the energy would have dissipated immensely.
So it wouldn't be a 160-foot wall of water when it hits New York.
Not even close. it would lose its megatsunami status long before it reached the North American continent, registering as a much smaller, far more manageable marine event. But there is a second reason, too.
The mountain itself.
Yes, the structural geology of the island. Modern geologists agree that the western flank of that volcano, the specific part conjectured to fall, is actually far too small and geologically stable to undergo a sudden, catastrophic, monolithic collapse anytime in the next 10,000 years. If it does eventually shed mass, it is far more likely to happen in a series of smaller, sequential landslides.
So, no massive, single bowling ball falling into the Atlantic. Maybe just a handful of pebbles sliding in over a long period of time.
Just say.
Okay, so, what does this all mean for you listening right now? Should you be canceling your East Coast beach vacations? No, those are safe. But that doesn't mean the threat doesn't exist elsewhere, right? If global ocean crossing waves are largely a myth, where is the actual danger zone?
The threat is intensely local. You don't need to fear the wide open beaches of Florida or Spain. You need to respect the steep, narrow bodies of water, the deep fjords. Which is exactly why the global geological community is extremely focused on a very specific mountain in Norway.
The Akerneset Mountain. And honestly, this part of the research was genuinely chilling because it's not a historical retrospective or a theoretical model. It is an active ticking clock. There is a deeply monitored 2-meter-wide crack running right through the rock face of this mountain, located right above a very deep fjord. And this crack isn't dormant. It is actively widening by 4 centimeters every single year.
4 centimeters a year, in geological terms, is practically a full sprint. Continuous analysis shows that a massive slab of rock, up to 54 million cubic meters in volume, has already detached and is actively in motion. Scientists do not consider a collapse a possibility. They consider it an inevitability. It is really just a matter of friction finally giving way to gravity.
So when that 54 million cubic meters finally drops into the fjord below it, the local impact is catastrophic.
The predictive models show it will generate a localized mega tsunami between 35 and 100 meters in vertical height on the opposite shore. Those monstrous waves will then channel down the narrow fjord system and strike local coastal communities like Hellesylt and Geiranger with the waves up to 85 meters high.
That is nearly 280 feet of water funneling directly into populated towns.
Which is why Norway has implemented such rigorous state-of-the-art monitoring systems on that mountain. They know the rock is coming down and they know the wave will follow. They just need the sensors to give them enough advance warning to evacuate those communities before the splash happens.
It perfectly distills the true nature of this hazard. Mega tsunamis are not these unpredictable, planet-ending waves sweeping across open oceans to destroy continents. They are highly localized, physically predictable consequences of gravity and mass occurring in very specific geographical setups. Steep, unstable mountains situated right next to deep water.
That's the perfect summary of the risk.
We have definitely covered some serious ground today. Let's just quickly recap the journey of this deep dive. We started by breaking down the underlying physics of the splash, realizing that a mega tsunami isn't a stealthy ocean swell pushed by a shifting tectonic plate, but rather a violent top-down displacement. It is a bowling ball dropping into a bathtub, generating localized waves that start out massively tall but decay rapidly over distance due to radial damping.
Right, and we examined the historical benchmark, the 1958 Lituya Bay event, where an earthquake dropped 80 million tons of rock and ice into a fjord. We explored how the plunging and crater model, combining trapped air, displaced sediment, and shattering glaciers, multiplied that force to create an unfathomable 1,700-foot wave.
Yeah, and we saw how the Edgerton effect shaped our prehistoric Earth during the Chicxulub asteroid impact, sending water miles into the stratosphere. And tragically, we saw how a lack of geological respect at the Vajont Dam showed the human-made consequences of ignoring these physical laws.
And most importantly, we separated the Hollywood hype from the scientific reality. The East Coast isn't about to be swallowed by a rogue wave from the Canary Islands. The real, active dangers are incredibly local, lurking in the steep, narrow fjords of places like Norway and Alaska.
I guarantee digging into the mechanics of these events is going to completely change the way you look at any towering cliff face situated next to a deep lake or bay.
It serves as a very potent reminder that the Earth is a highly dynamic system, and gravity is a relentless, patient force.
But before we let you go, there is one final lingering piece of this puzzle we want to leave you with. We established that these events are localized to places with steep mountains and deep water. Well, in 2017, there was a devastating mega tsunami in Carrot Fjord, Greenland. It created a 300-foot wave that rushed down the coast and devastated a local settlement. But what triggered that massive landslide wasn't a sudden tectonic earthquake. When researchers investigated, they concluded the collapse was caused by melting glacial ice that had previously been acting as a structural glue holding the fractured rock face together.
It's just a sobering detail with massive, massive implications.
So here's the question for you to ponder long after this deep dive is over. As global temperatures continue to steadily rise and ancient structural ice continues to melt and release its frozen grip on steep mountain walls all around the world, could we be unlocking a new, highly unpredictable era of localized mega tsunamis in northern regions that have been safely frozen and stable for thousands of years?
It is exactly the question the global geological community is rushing to answer right now.
Definitely something to keep in mind. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. The next time you are standing next to a skyscraper, take a second to look all the way up at the very top and just imagine it is made of water. We'll see you next time.